Oxford Sparks podcast, episode 13, Senses, part 3.
The LHC can give you a very, very intense, very well controlled, extremely accurate, very high luminosity beams of particles to do the experiments there. The particles that occasionally hit us from space, which we don't have much control over, but we try and then infer physics from them when they occasionally reach us, are millions to tens of millions times more energetic. My name is Garrett Cotter, and I'm a lecturer in the physics department at Oxford University. My research is in high-energy astrophysics and astroparticle physics, which is an area of research which is on the boundary between astronomy and high-energy physics. And so what we're doing is we're looking at the behaviour of high-energy particles out there in space.
Whilst Garrett works on fundamental physics, he's also trying to understand the physics of individual objects in the universe, such as galaxies or black holes.
When we look at galaxies that have a central black hole that's gobbling up gas, so these active galactic nuclei, as they're called, quite often the magnetic field around these black holes gets twisted up to be very, very, very intense. And that results in a jet of extremely fast particles shooting out of the black hole. Now, we believe that that is very important for the physics of galaxy formation. A galaxy tries to form stars by having gas condensing, cooling into clumps, and those clumps condensing and ultimately become stars. But if too much gas congregates around the centre, gets swept up near the black hole, and then these jets turn on, you have these jets blasting out into the galactic interstellar medium, and they heat it up, and they quench the star formation. So there's a sort of a thermostat type effect. So trying to understand how these high-energy jet processes work is very important, because it's important for galaxy formation, and it's important for trying to work out the physics of the region close to the black holes.
So what is Garrett looking for?
So we look for telltale signs of the physics at the base of these jets close to the black hole by looking for extremely high-energy particles coming from that region. Primarily, we look for very high-energy photons, that's, clumps of light energy. Those could reach energies which are up to thousands of times the energies that are seen in the LHC proton collisions. So the very high-energy gamma rays that come from active galaxies propagate through the universe for extremely large distances, up to billions of light years. We can see these objects quite a significant distance across the observable universe. Then they hit the top of the Earth's atmosphere. What we do in the gamma ray detection technique is essentially we use the Earth's atmosphere as a particle detector. The gamma ray hits the top of the Earth's atmosphere, it will hit a nucleus of a nitrogen atom or an oxygen atom, and then it creates an electron-positron pair, and then that electron-positron pair will scatter on down through the atmosphere, and you get a cascade of generations of further and further particles coming out of that. Now, those particles have come from the original gamma ray, so the total energy that those particles have is the energy the original gamma ray had. And they're going through the Earth's atmosphere faster than the speed of light in air. So the speed of light in vacuum, Einstein, relativity, everybody knows, upper limit, you can't beat it. But as you know from refraction in air, the speed of light in a gas like air is a little bit slower. But these electrons are coming down essentially negligibly slower than the speed of light in a vacuum. And you get a phenomenon that's called Cherenkov radiation coming off these, and which is closely analogous to the sonic boom from a plane travelling through air at a speed faster than the speed of sound in air. You get a shock wave, but it's an electromagnetic shock wave. And what you perceive that as, or what you can measure it as, is a flash of blue light.
How do they see these flashes?
Individually, they're quite bright, because as we were saying, the particle energies are very, very high. But they're extremely short-lived. So they last for about one billionth, or a few billionths of a second. So the challenge in trying to detect these is to have a telescope on the ground, which doesn't necessarily have to be finely figured like a classic optical astronomy telescope, that is looking for quite a broad flash of light on the sky, but it's got to have a camera that can read out at these very, very fast speeds, a billion frames a second, 1,000 million frames a second. And then you've also got to have electronics behind the camera to reject any signals that are coming in, for example, from just the glow of the night sky itself. And then there are other particles coming down through the sky from objects other than your astronomical targets, which you might be interested in, which essentially are background that you have to try and filter out. And you have to try to do this for maximum efficiency pretty much in real time. You can't turn the camera on and read it out and have this huge data stream coming out and then try and analyse it offline later. You'll be completely swamped by the data rates. So the camera has to have fairly intelligent electronics in it, where it holds a few billionths of a second of information in a buffer, and then when it thinks it sees the start of one of these little flashes developing in a few pixels on the camera, it says, right, read out the whole camera now, and then it reads out one of these events. And that electronics and that experimental equipment and techniques are very, very similar to the techniques that are used in a lot of the ground-based particle experiments at places like the LHC. A lot of the equipment is very, very much in common. But you put it on the back of a telescope rather than around your beam pipe underground.
What do these telescopes look like?
If you looked at one of these telescopes, you would think it was like a relatively crude version of a big standard astronomical telescope. It usually sits out in open air. They're pretty robust things. They sit out in the desert places like Namibia, and the next generation that we're going to be building that we're involved in here in Oxford is going to Chile. And the sizes range, depending on the particular gamma ray energy that you're interested in, from about 4 metres up to maybe about 20 metres. The largest gamma ray ground-based telescopes at the moment, they are larger diameter than the largest of the present generation of optical astronomy telescopes. But the crucial difference is there are much lower tolerances on the image quality you need for them. You know, they don't have to be as finely figured, the mirror doesn't have to be kept in the precise shape. So they can be made much more cheaply and much more robustly. And yeah, they're usually designed to sit out in the open.
What do the images look like in the end?
If you're sitting on the ground looking up, if your naked eye was sensitive enough, you'd see a sort of teardrop-shaped flash of light coming down through the sky. And if you look at the individual images on the cameras, you know, over the course of a few nanoseconds, that's what you see. But of course, the thing is, that isn't the astronomical object. This is the light cone in the sky. So the way we go about making an image of what's up there in the sky is to have several telescopes spread out over a given area, such that within the field of view of several telescopes, you can see the same air shower coming down. And so each telescope sees it from a slightly different angle. And essentially, you just use trigonometry to try and work out backwards where the original photon came from, where the original gamma ray came from. And then you build that up into a genuine picture of what's up there in the sky by saying, right, one flash at a time is one photon coming from your target at a time. And so over the course of many nights of observations, which it takes for these sorts of objects, you can build up a picture of the brightness on the sky as a function of, you know, position.
What are they starting to learn from these images?
I think the thing that we're starting to learn with the gamma rays about astrophysical objects, which has been a very great source of debate, is trying to find gamma rays at sufficiently high energies that it implies those gamma rays came from protons or other hadronic-type particles to start with. Now, the results in this area at the moment are tentative, and this is one of the big reasons why we're building the new next generation gamma ray telescope, the Cherenkov Telescope Array. So we've known for a long time that there must be processes in intergalactic and interstellar space that produce very, very high energy cosmic rays that hit the Earth at energies that we're not capable of creating with terrestrial experiments. But one of the big difficulties with trying to work out what these are is that the Milky Way has got its own magnetic field, which by human terms is not very, very intense. But it's still enough that if a fast charged particle is travelling through the Milky Way for thousands of light years, it will be bent by the magnetic field. So, you know, charged particles in a magnetic field experience a sideways force, right? And so that means that when we get the detections of the very high energy particles on Earth, even if we see where they've come from, we can't guarantee that was the direction of origin, Right, so within the Milky Way, we have very little clear evidence that they're coming from any particular sort of astrophysical object. And once you get out into nearby intergalactic space, where we believe that some of these particles are coming from as well, even though the sources in intergalactic space are quite sparse on the sky, you know, these active galaxies are quite rare, the few very high energy particles that we see are almost coming in at random. There's very, very tentative statistical analyses that claim that they may be associated with the active galaxies, and there's a lot of debate about whether these analyses are robust.
What are they starting to learn from these images?
There are some very tentative results again, with the present generation of gamma-ray telescopes looking for suggestions that the actual protons that were accelerated are producing very, very high energy gamma rays when they collide in supernova remnants and in the regions around gamma-ray emitting pulsars within the Milky Way. And that's one of our key goals with the new gamma-ray observatory, the Cherenkov Telescope Array, which we're involved in here in Oxford, is to get nice secure detections of these gamma rays at very high energies that are telling us what the particle acceleration is going on in these objects. And this is important not just for the exciting relativistic physics that's involved. Ultimately, these processes are the processes that dump energy from the last generation of stars into the interstellar medium and then give us the next generation of stars, right? It makes a big difference when you're working on how generations of stars go from one to the next. Do you dump energy into the interstellar medium by a mechanical process with all these high-energy protons? Do you do it mostly by radiation? You know, do you simply heat the material up with ultraviolet light from very, very hot stars? What fraction of the energy comes in from supernovae? We've got increasingly sophisticated models of how the stars in the Milky Way populate from generation to generation. But the detailed observations of how the energy comes out of a supernova and goes back into the gas is still a pretty significant mystery.
You've been listening to the Oxford Sparks podcast, narrated by me, Brian McInwells. This podcast was produced for the University of Oxford by Steve Pritchard. For more fascinating science, visit www.oxfordsparks.ox.ac.uk.